for the latest legal insights in sport, welcome to the Charles Russell Speechless Podcast, The Score.
Hello and welcome to The Score, the debut podcast from the sports team here at Charles Russell Speechless. My name is Darren Bailey and with me is my colleague Nick White.
Good afternoon, Darren.
Hi, Nick. Thanks for joining me today. Great topic today. One of the issues that we've really got on our minds at the moment with all these major events going on is ticketing. And no better person in the land to be able to tell us a little bit about ticketing. And what we plan to do over the course of our podcast is to try and unwind and interpret and just make more simple and straightforward some of the legal issues as they relate to big events and issues around the whole sports business.
It sounds like a very good plan.
Well, let's crack on now. We are in a privileged position because we recently held a Future of Ticketing Summit here at Charles Russell Speechless, where we were looking at a whole range of different issues, and we were fortunate enough to have some real experts sort of telling us a little bit about not only where we've come from, but where we're going in the future. And I thought it was a particularly good event in that sense. Nick, I don't know, you were obviously instrumental in pulling it together. How did you think it went?
Yeah, I enjoyed it very much. I thought we had a good range of speakers with different specialisms, different areas of expertise from across the ticketing space. And we got some really interesting views coming in and some intelligent questions. I think the audience was really engaged. So I was very pleased with the event.
So now we've just got to try and make sure we get those messages communicated out there, and so we can sort of hopefully find a way forward and make it a lot more effective. And it's no surprise that as I sort of went to the phone today, the first thing I saw was looking at the events that are coming up, a whole series of different incidents around the events, the huge cost of tickets for the Cricket World Cup, some touting going on in the lead up to the Champions League, some of the other issues around the Europa League. It is incredible how the first touting case apparently emerged in 1871, and here we are still in the 21st century with major sophistication and technology still battling to try and deal with these things.
Yeah, it's an ongoing challenge, and I guess one of the issues is that what we're faced with effectively is a kind of arms race. So as the legislators and the technologists make more and more progress, you are faced with increasing sophistication on the part of the touts and the unauthorized secondary ticketing markets. And so, as I say, it is a form of arms race with each side trying to get one up on the other.
Well, steady on, Nick. I know you want to get direct to the technology, but let's go back to basics first, can we? One of the things that intrigued me was that we were able to get some analysis of two recent high-profile cases in the world of touting, the physical touting, if you like, that occurs around events from Cheltenham Racecourse and from Chelsea FC. And I was particularly interested in the intervention on the Cheltenham case, where rather than using sort of contemporary methods of enforcement, they went directly back to the good old law of trespass.
Yes, well, the law is quite tricky in this area. It would be ideal if there was one simple anti-touting law that could be used and applied across the land and be relied on to be effective. The reality is that those who are seeking to prevent touts from operating on or around their grounds do face significant challenges. There are a number of different kinds of laws that can be used, from trespass to, you know, conspiracy to cause trespass and various other kinds of offences, breach of licence. We've had the tort of conversion, is it an abuse of the right of the rights holder in the ticket to use it in an unauthorised fashion? So yeah, lots of different issues. It's difficult, it's expensive.
Well, trust the lawyers to have confused things before they start to bring forward solutions. But what I thought was great about the Cheltenham situation was that they really planned their strategy in a very effective manner. Now, admittedly, they were in the luxurious position of being able to use a piece of land on which the touts gather, which they had ownership, which did play in nicely to the whole trespassing type of case. But what also struck me was to listen to about the numbers of touts on the championship race days in the festival. Over 200 touts And that's got to be interfering with people's experience of the event and just really not particularly pleasant making your way through that as you go into a major sporting event.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think that's something that the courts take very seriously as well, which is, you know, is the activities of these touts causing an impact on the enjoyment of the people who are turning up just to attend the event? And the courts are very eager to help if that is the case.
My sense is actually the consumer experience, the punter experience, if you like, is playing more of a role in the minds of the court, and it's creating quite fertile ground in, to actually get these injunctions to prevent touting going on around the physical vicinity of events. And what I thought I liked about the Cheltenham example was that they really thought hard about what they needed to do. So they were really key in getting their terms and conditions correct. They really focused on the law of trespass. They really focused on getting good quality evidence and good quality witness statements before taking their case forward, knowing that one small gap in any of that planning could have been fatal to their efforts of actually getting the injunction.
I think that's right, and it just goes back to the point I was trying to make earlier, which is that it is a very expensive and exacting and frankly difficult process to try and get one of these injunctions underway. And I think that's one of those areas where in future maybe we should all be looking at, is there an easier solution? Can we make this easier? Because as you say, very difficult to get all the T's and C's right, get all your preparation right, get all of the relevant stakeholders on side. There's an awful lot to think about.
There is, I think one of the things that I also took from that presentation was the fact that you were going against defendants that were unknown. Now, that might sound actually like an easy ride if you haven't got anybody on the other side, but the duty that lawyers have to the court means that you've actually got to be even more thorough because you have to be able to put their position forward and gain the benefit of having an unknown defendant. And I thought that intervention was really key, actually. And the thing that I liked, the conclusion about that, was it was this idea of be innovative and be brave, and the courts will increasingly support you, and you can make your experience for your fans and the people coming to your event a much nicer experience around the vicinity. So I was really encouraged by that, and actually going backwards before we were going forwards to future solutions, I thought was quite informative.
Yeah, and I think it was mentioned by Ed Rowntree, who was one of the speakers, it was the barrister who's been working with Chelsea. He mentioned that, you know, one of the terms that the courts had used was scourge in relation to ticket touting. And I think that's the way that the courts look on this problem. So much as it may be the case that it is difficult and awkward to try and get your case together and you have to give cross undertakings and damages and so on, as you say, you need to put the position of the persons unknown, the touts themselves, you know, you do have to do all those things, and it does make it very difficult, but the courts will help if they can.
I thought it was also quite fascinating, it was quite helpful to have a non-football scenario and then move into the football scenario with Chelsea, because of course there is bespoke legislation as it relates to ticket touting in football, and there are prohibitions, and I think it's sometimes interesting that you do have to use, I would like to say horses for courses given we're discussing Cheltenham, but I won't, but what we're also looking at here is being able to use legislation in a really constructive and effective way that may have not been used in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, key difference always very important to remember is that for ticket touting, that is a criminal offence in this country. Touting of other tickets is not. So, as you say, there's always going to be a bespoke approach depending on whether you're talking about football or whether you're talking about some other sport or music or entertainment or whatever.
I took from Ed and his discussion about the Chelsea case, the preparation, the importance of getting your evidence, the importance of being really diligent in making sure that when you go for your injunction, it is as impactful an application as you can make it, with the best quality evidence, witness statements, and all of the relevant research done. And again, they were very effective, highly effective in getting those across the line.
Yeah, absolutely. They got their ducks in a row. They had highly competent and skilled lawyers on all sides getting together all of the documentation, getting it right and getting the right result out of the court. You know, without wanting to bang on about it too much, but you do have to ask yourself, is it fair that it needs to be as difficult as it is, and does it need to be as exhaustive and tricky a process to get one of these injunctions, or could actually more be done to prevent this problem of touting?
So just hold on then. What I don't want you to do is get too far ahead of ourselves here, because we're just dealing with one element here. We're talking about the physical issues around what's going on in the venues. But most people now, these days, don't get their tickets in a physical sense. Most of it's all on their phones, and they don't really see the tickets. So one of the things that we were looking at is, well, actually, the lawyers, yeah, they're doing okay. They're doing better than they were. They're getting people off the streets. But actually, is the law just secondary now? Should it actually now be about technology?
No doubt technology is playing a key role. You know, I think you do have to take a holistic approach. The law has a role to play. Technology has a role to play. And all of the various stakeholders, from the clubs or event organisers through to the ticketing companies, through to even the regulators like the Competition and Markets Authorities, they all have a role to play together. But yeah, you're right, the technology is particularly interesting, I think. And there are lots of very sophisticated technologies that are being developed in order to try and counteract some of these issues.
What I enjoyed actually, and I sat there pretty much open mouthed during the course of the technology section of the summit here, that was some of the advanced information that is now available and some of these potential solutions. But you're the expert on this side of things, Nick. What is it that you see maybe coming out in this kind of technology that's going to make a difference? And I say that in the context of sport, with that real difficult issue for sports events is that they do start on time at a designated moment, and culturally, we're not particularly great at getting to events early, so you've got some real challenges for the technology to overcome. But do you think it's possible?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. That is a big challenge. You know, that you've got the 3 p.m. Saturday afternoon kickoff. They're not going to hold it up because they're sort of scanning people's barcodes and people can't get in on time. It has to be quick to be effective, and that is absolutely a major issue. I think what we're seeing with a lot of these technologies is that they are getting there. You know, mobile ticketing is getting more and more sophisticated. The hardware that's required in situ at the venue is coming down in price and is becoming easier to afford and install. And we've got some amazing technologies. I mean, I was reading about SecureTix, which is the Ticketmaster technology, whereby you have a barcode in your phone that represents your ticket, but the barcode is actually updated every few minutes automatically, so that you can't simply screenshot the barcode and then send it to someone else so that they can use it to access the venue. You have to have the correct barcode at the correct time linked to the correct mobile phone in order to get into the venue, and it's those kinds of technologies that I think really can be the basis of a quantum leap forward in terms of preventing ticketing fraud. But you're absolutely right, we have to get people into the venue on time, and the solution, the Glastonbury type solution, doesn't necessarily work for everyone.
Go on, I'm sure people are scratching their heads with the Glastonbury solution. That sounds like a nice cocktail.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
Yeah, absolutely. So what is the Glastonbury solution? I think it's been highly publicised that at Glastonbury, the approach there is that each individual must submit a photograph, and that the photograph appears on the ticket, so that there is that process of verification as and when you turn up at the turnstiles at Glastonbury. Not that I have real turnstiles, but you know what I mean. So when you turn up there, you have your photo on the ticket and you have a form of verification, so that if the two don't match, then you don't get in, and they're quite strict about that. And as one of our speakers touched on at our summit, Reg Walker, he was saying that, you know, it's simply unworkable to have that kind of approach at the football, at a football game, for example, or another sporting event which starts on time and it simply takes too long to, you know, monitor each and every single person coming in and check that they, the image matches the one on the ticket.
Yeah, I can see the practical difficulties associated with that, but you know, it's going to only be a matter of time before technology is playing more of a role, it seems to me. And do you see a facial recognition future at our sports grounds?
Yeah, I think there is. There is a future for that kind of technology. I mean, there's facial recognition. There is the use of, as we've just said, you know, photographs, which are then checked essentially by eye, which I think will always be too slow. There's iris recognition, which obviously gets used by the likes of Apple. There are privacy issues here, Darren, as you well know, as an esteemed lawyer.
Well, I get the fact that, interestingly enough, data and privacy are always used as blockers to some of these ideas. But I do think they need to be explored. But I think they need to be explored as part of a joined up package, don't they? And I think the consumers, if they want a pleasant experience, may need to start thinking about getting to grounds earlier. But then the event owners and those people that control the stadiums maybe need to do a little bit more to make it more attractive to get to the games earlier with their pricing policies on food and drinks and so forth. Is it attractive to get to the ground? Is there a bit more entertainment going on? Do we get a bit more of a, hate to say it perhaps, but an Americanization of some of these events which encourage people to get there early, and so you can have a more sophisticated system to protect the punters? So it's kind of it's not one easy element here. It's a bit of technology, it's a bit of legal innovation, it's a bit of changing the offer when you get to the stadium pre-game. It's a little bit of all of that, isn't it?
I think that's right, and I think another aspect of it, which is probably undersold actually, is the education aspect, which is, you know, in the same way maybe that in this country people have learnt that smoking is not really socially acceptable anymore. I think people will have to come to learn that actually, you know, reselling tickets above face value is not really acceptable anymore. And there's a real question as to, is there an educational piece? Are people willing to learn that lesson? And are there individuals and organisations who can actually do the educating?
Interesting. Now, I don't want to get listeners out there confused with the fact that it was just lawyers saying all the bad stuff. We learned during your technology session about some of the opportunities that flow from the whole ticketing framework and being able to be much more effective in engaging with your end consumer, giving them what they want, when they want it and how they want it, using the interrelationship between a sporting event consumer and ticketing. So were you impressed by those?
Yeah, I think it's great, and it stands to reason. You know, if you're going to have your mobile phone essentially as the medium through which the ticket exists, then there's a whole load of possible technology that you can, and you know, arguably event organisers should be building the experience around. So, it was great to hear some of the examples about how, again, we go back to Cheltenham and Ben Barker from Monte Rosa joined us to talk about the app that they've built for Cheltenham and the ways in which that app is used to gather data on people attending the event and to be able to provide them with bespoke opportunities and enhanced race day experience. And I think you're right, that is part of the positive side of ticketing technology.
I think we might look back in a few years' time and be extraordinarily surprised that we tolerated some of the things that have gone on with ticketing in the past, and that as we move into a much more mature an engaged world where people want information, they want services, they want to know where they can park immediately, they want to know where there's no queue for the beer, they want to know where they're going to be sitting, they want all of these things directly. We'll find ticketing playing just a much more significant role in all of these things in a really constructive way, I think. And that was certainly the message that I took out of that technology section for sure.
Yeah, absolutely right. I guess, you know, we always come back to this challenge, don't we, of the transferability of the tickets, and you're always going to get people who, for genuine reasons, they can't make it on the day. They're sick, they're suddenly on holiday and they hadn't realised it. All sorts of reasons why they want to transfer their ticket. Dog's eating the ticket is a classic, but if it's in your phone, then you've got a big problem.
And so is the dog.
Yeah, well, that's true, yeah. So you know, it is a big issue, and I think there are certainly lots of issues that need to be worked through.
I thought what was helpful was having Richard Harris along, the ticketing manager from the RFU, because in a way he kind of demonstrated to me the levels of complexity that still exist in our ticketing legislative framework. So there's a guy who was previously at the FA dealing with ticketing. Now, of course, at the FA being involved in football ticketing, there was a specific criminal law offence. He then moved on to the IOC, and as people who followed the events may know, there was a specific piece of legislation introduced directly for the benefit of the London Olympic Games, which made various criminal offences associated with touting activity. And then he went on to look at the Rugby World Cup in 2015, when he was without any legislation or any support working in rugby. And it seems incredible that one individual navigating around events taking place in the same city would be subject to three different regimes.
Yeah, no, it was very fortunate for us, I think, to find in Richard someone who could bring that wealth of experience, you know, so much governing body experience from the world of sports ticketing. And I think, you know, what he had to say and you know, the approach on the different challenges of working for the different governing bodies, you know, the contrast between an Olympics event and a you know, major football event, major rugby events, you know, is always enlightening. And it's really interesting that in his role now at Twickenham, it's not all about rugby. As we mentioned, you know, he had the likes of Metallica playing Twickenham, so I know you were in the mosh pit at the front there, Darren.
Well, sadly not, actually, on that particular occasion, but we should probably leave my musical taste out of it, because that will be a big turn-off for most people. But it was refreshing, I think, to hear also the fact that he still sees really good opportunities about the whole digitisation process for the ticketing framework down in rugby. Still sees opportunities to assist people when they're going overseas, because obviously we know with the rugby, the tours and travel side of things is very big. So it felt a really constructive kind of approach to ticketing. Use it again, coming back, well, not just on the negatives, but really helping the consumer, really helping the fans to get where they want to get to, get as much out of the sporting event as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. There are certainly very positive aspects to ticketing and the ways in which it can be used to engage the fan, give the fan a very positive, or be part of giving the fan a very positive match day experience. And you know, for all the talk of the problems with secondary ticketing, the problems with touting, you know, ticketing is a key way, it's a key commercial right, and it's a key way in which governing bodies and event organisers can get to know the people who support them.
Yeah, and I think it was interesting that he realises that some of the biggest threats exist within the rugby family, who may have traditionally seen these tickets as perks, able to generate money to buy kit and rugby balls. As you've said, that kind of that tolerance is now gone, and I think it is really zero tolerance in this area now. So it'll be interesting to see how sports make sure that they can still look after their family, as well as actually keeping a tough line in terms of the abuse of the tickets that they distribute amongst their sport. So, no legal framework will be complete without a look at the whole enforcement side of things. And I felt that some of those issues that we raised in that last session were absolutely fascinating. And I was going into that session slightly concerned that it was going to be, well, there's not much we can really do about this, and we'd lack the powers here, or we lack the inclination there. And I was also encouraged to see whether or not there might be a possibility of coming up with a third way enforcement solution. Yes, there's a criminal law solution and there's a private contractual law solution, but actually maybe melding those two together. And I thought it did a great job of bringing out the enthusiasm for the enforcement process in that last session.
Yeah, absolutely. So we had a couple of different representatives, didn't we? We had Professor Mike Waterson, who wrote the government commissioned report into secondary ticketing, and we had Richard Bagworth of the Serious Organised Crime Group of the police, and we had Reg Walker, a consultant who helps on a private basis companies investigate and deal with the problems around ticket touting for the most part. And there were some really interesting and contrasting views and ideas that came out of that session. I'm just going to say, I think the key, from my perspective, again, to come back to it, is this holistic idea of it's not and it can't be down to one single stakeholder or organisation to take responsibility for this. We need to take responsibility across the ecosystem. Otherwise, these problems will simply persist.
What struck you about some of the solutions that they were coming up with that you thought were actually particularly intriguing that might really start to present a real barrier to the touts exploiting these events?
Yeah, I don't know if there's any sort of panacea that I'm sort of thinking, right, well, this is the end for touts. You know, I used the phrase arms race earlier. It was very interesting to hear of this sort of characterization of different kind of individuals and or organizations who actually engage in the bulk buying of tickets.
Now, that was quite alarming,
the primary
actually, wasn't
market.
It?
Yeah.
Quite alarming.
Yeah, so it was kind of split into this idea of you have the sort of armchair geeks who do it as a sort of as a hobby, but for a profit as well. But then you have, more disturbingly, the issue of actual organised crime and serious crime groups behind this. And I thought that was one of the most sort of eyebrow-raising aspects of the day, which was, to hear about the involvement of paramilitary terrorist organisations in secondary ticketing activities.
And I think
it's a concern.
It is a concern. I think the whole edifice that sits below the tout, if you like, it would be a surprise to most people involved in sport, but these activities do generate vast sums of money, as you can see from some of the prices that are being charged. And if they are looking to generate funds to support their activities, then ticket touting, unless it is actually dealt with very effectively at all levels, is going to be a place they're going to continue to come back to.
Yeah, absolutely. And if there was one message out of all of this for me, I think it comes back to the event organiser, and does the event organiser itself really want to prevent and stifle that secondary ticketing market? I'm not talking about selling of secondary tickets for face value. I'm talking about the selling of them at a profit. Do they really want to stop that? Because if they don't, and I'm afraid to say it's the case that across many sports and in many instances they're actually not too fussed once they've sold their batch of primary tickets in record time. Some entities regard that as job done. The real takeout for me is this question of, do the event organisers themselves really want to stifle this market? And if they have the appetite to do it, then there is support there from their lawyers on the one hand, Competition and Markets Authority, Trading Standards, the police. There is support out there. So I think that was my sort of one big takeout. And what about you, Darren? Did you have a big takeout or two from the day?
I did, actually. I thought a few things really resonated with me. One is, as you've just described, it's a culture of being inclined to do something about it, recognising it. Actually, there is a problem. It's not fair for me to leave people who like my sport or my event to be exploited in this way. It doesn't feel right. I want to take action. I think the other thing I took from it is there is an absolute need for legal innovation. We need legal strategies that actually are programmed to deliver the outcome that you want. And I thought the Cheltenham and the Chelsea cases gave me great hope that with pre-planning, good evidence, quality legal representation, a bit of innovation as well, and being brave and taking the difficult decision, the courts will now, I think, increasingly back people who want to do something about this. And so, overall, I was very encouraged by where we got to in the day with that whole context of solution-driven opportunities to actually generate wider engagement with the fan, and also a kind of a realisation that no one party in that room can do it themselves. We do need to join the dots together and collaboratively use our complementary skills and powers to actually deliver a solution that works for everyone. So, yeah, I was overall encouraged, and let's just see, hopefully, over the course of this great summer of sport we've got coming up, hopefully there won't be too many exploitations going on.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Nick. That was great.
that's it from the Score for this week, but we'll be back with further fascinating editions.
I look forward to it.